Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Another wonderful day. We have an opportunity to learn how we can better protect our health. Brand new information. I was going to continue. I'll do it tomorrow, but I was going to continue with the series I've been doing, A Classroom on the Air, Functional Foods. What is it within a food, whether it's olives or apples, that can really help prevent or even to help mitigate diseases? But something I read today from the BioResearch Virus Center, a place out in Nevada, a team of virologists who've been working on understanding the underlying cause of viral infections and, of course, what would be a natural way of approaching them. So I'm going to spend some time on that, giving you more information and something that I personally experienced in my own clinical practice of helping thousands of people with different viruses. We're acting like suddenly COVID is the only virus we've ever experienced. No, we've had a lot of viruses. So I'm going to spend more time on that today. I'll continue tomorrow and for the next week on our Classroom on the Air with functional foods, superfoods. But also today, because this audience is filled with so many really not just progressive minds, but people who are capable of wanting to know the truth, whatever it is, so they can make up their own mind of how they want to deal with it. So I'm going to bring pieces of a puzzle together for you. Some very intriguing pieces. Now, mind you, what I'm about to show you in one of these clips in a few moments, you've never heard of, never seen, but it ties in information I was receiving from my sources about 3 months ago, about why patients were dying at an accelerated rate, unparalleled rate, in Great Britain in nursing homes. And it was based upon a very powerful sedative that is used in hospice care. You give this to people and, you know, they're like high levels of OxyContin. But it can also cause death. And over 100,000 of these pills were purchased by their Ministry of Health and then given exclusively in these homes. And then something happened, and no one has touched the story. We're going to touch the story with someone who was a first-hand observer today. This is an exclusive. And to show you how nefarious parts of the pandemic have become when they need everyone to pump up the numbers, jimmy the numbers up, make them something they're not. And we've seen this, by the way, epidemiologists and mathematicians. We're talking about some of the best and brightest in their field in the world, orthodox, pro-vaccine. They're the ones giving this information. And they're the ones being attacked by people who have no background, no credibility, not clinicians. You never hear from the doctors treating the patients in the front line who are saving lives. You may hear of a doctor frustrated because all they're doing is intubation, remember originally, and all those patients dying because they had no medicines. Well, we did have medicines. We had a lot of medicines, and these medicines were being used, but then they were being attacked because they were off patent. In fact, the irony of irony, the most powerful of these in healing and saving lives could have saved about 4 million lives, was ivermectin. Well, who owned ivermectin? Oh, the same company that no longer has the patent, and we all know it costs a penny a day to make a pill. That's it, $1 a day to sell that pill. Well, no, they had a $3,000 pill per pill. So it is so corrupt that, thank goodness, teams of lawyers, hundreds of lawyers worldwide, who I'm in contact with, who I've communicated with, are suing everyone who they feel is responsible, governments, etc., on crimes against humanity. So this is where the battle is going. But I'm going to present pieces of the puzzle to show you how you've been played. Is COVID real? Yes. Can it kill you? Yes. Are there certain people who are more susceptible and therefore they should get real good attention? Yes. Are there alternatives? Are we all equally capable of getting COVID and dying? No. Is there any scientific evidence that the protocols are using work? None. But it's a great marketing program. So that's what we're going to spend some time on today, bringing the pieces of good science and good journalism for you to examine. What you do with it's up to you. But we start with something that was one of my very first individuals that I counseled, happened to be a person who was prominent in society who had recurring outbreaks of herpes. And I suggested a lysine and vitamin C with quercetin, those three together. Why? Because they all had very strong antiviral properties. But the leader of that was a nutrient that most Americans didn't know about, might have heard, never used it. But I have not found anything that has helped more people overcome viral infections than this one nutrient. But I don't use it as one nutrient. I always tell people use it in the different combinations. And it didn't matter which virus they were dealing with. Well, now it turns out the BioVirus Research Group has found something very similar. And so that's what they're focusing upon. In fact, there was a study done with a medical staff at a clinic, and they were getting cases of COVID down to 2 cases per month before lysine was instituted. The virologist, Dr. Christopher Kagan, and others strongly suggest the frontline healthcare workers embark on a daily regimen of lysine, that's L-Y-S-I-N-E, therapy due to exposure to the virus. I consider this a groundbreaking publication. And you can see it at researchgate.net. Now, there's a balance in the body between arginine, A-R-G-I-N-I-N-E, and lysine. Lysine therapy interrupts the replication of viruses, including, we believe, COVID-19. Why? Because it counters arginine, an amino acid that fosters the eruption of dormant viruses. That's why some people can't eat a lot of certain nuts. They're high in arginine. And I get emails all the time. Oh, Gary, I don't know why. Maybe I'm stressed, but I just had an outbreak. You know, I've got herpes here, herpes there. Okay. And I don't separate out the herpes when I'm working with them. By the way, I used to work with herpes 6, especially in people with HIV infection, and that is a deadly virus. And using high-dose intravenous vitamin C and glutathione pushes was able to knock them out. And people said after that, no more outbreaks. Well, you got cold sores on the lips, and you've got other types of viruses. Well, lysine can be safely used and has been for decades to quell herpes virus outbreaks. Lysine is available in foods in concentration form, inexpensive. For example, like a 500 milligram lysine tablet can be purchased for, oh, generally it's about, what, $10, $12 a bottle? So it's very affordable. And lysine and arginine, because if you have viruses, you want to go low on arginine. You do not want something that is high in arginine. And some of the protein powders out there lower your infection or reoccurring infection level with different viruses. In any case, 2,000 milligrams of lysine capsules along with a arginine-restricted diet. That would be chocolate, pumpkins, sesame seeds, wheat germ, orange juice, and most of your nuts. But it's not the case when it comes to sunflower seeds and sesame seeds. So you can still have those or the nut butters. But you just got to be conscious of this. Now, that's lower than what I would suggest. I won't tell you what I offer people because mine are, every protocol I give is uniquely matched to what I feel a person needs. But in this research team, they found the doses of 4,000 milligrams of lysine was safe and effective. Foods that have high ratio of lysine to arginine, such as eggs, tofu, sardines, pork, poultry, red meats, yogurt, are ones that I would not recommend. And yet that's what a lot of people suggest because that's what people are used to eating. Now, those are high in lysine over arginine, but you can go on a healthy vegan diet and it even comes out better. And so according to the virologists who were interviewed, over 1,000 patients have now been successfully treated with surprisingly rapid dissolution of symptoms and return to good health. Even severely infected patients have been able to come off ventilator with lysine therapy, so says the doctors. But you need a third-party validation, and this was writing in the International Journal of Infectious Disease. Another research team based in New York and another one in Texas report that arginine depletion is a strategy to quell both coronaviruses and other herpes family viruses. And the herpes family has dozens of viruses. In fact, in 2016, researchers documented that lysine, the amino acid, impairs the growth of coronaviruses in lab dishes. Mind you, we've had a lot of coronaviruses. This is just the latest one. So this team, they're not alone. The Journal of Antivirals and Antiretrovirus is what prompted the current interest in this particular clinic. So I would suggest that if you are a doctor, nurse, or someone working in hospitals, not just COVID, I'm talking about across the board, make sure that you're taking in a day 5 to 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 2 to 4,000 milligrams of quercetin, Q-U-E-R-E-C-T-I-N, and 2 to 5,000 milligrams of lysine. And it can go up from there, depending upon the severity of what you're dealing with. And same with vitamin C. If I find that someone's got a terminal cancer, it's not what they're going to take orally. It's what you're going to give them intravenous. Because orally, there's going to be a hydrochloric acid reaction or reflux when hydrochloric acid meets ascorbic acid, and then suddenly a person gets upset the stomach or they get a little diarrhea. That might be at 3 or 4 or 5,000 milligrams, depending upon the individual, the quality of their digestive system. And that's why I always say, if you're taking vitamin C as a functional food to help you, take it in a smoothie, preferably with banana, because that helps get more of it into your system. But if you are doing it really therapeutically and you have a very serious condition, then I suggest IV drips. Now, if you put an IV drip of vitamin C and other nutrients to go with it into every hospital ICU in America, and you routinely start to give everyone their vitamin drips, now you have to consider it depending upon the condition you're given to. I'm only right now talking about, for viral infections. But I've seen it work with people with upper respiratory tract infections and every kind of virus imaginable. And then now you're into megadosis, and that's what I specialized in. I was the first person in the world that I'm aware of because I spoke with the person that had the highest amount before me. I visited in Reidsville, North Carolina, a medical doctor who was using what was considered an astronomical amount of vitamin C. No one had even come close to that. I studied all the scientific literature. And he was using 50,000 milligrams, getting great results. So I saw with AIDS patients and cancer patients and diabetics that you could go up from there. And then we did. We were doing the highest amounts in the world before or since. And we had the greatest results. We had such an astronomical high amount of cures, and yet no one, I mean no one, within the scientific, medical, or media communities wanted to come and see what was going on. We're not talking about a few people. We're talking about thousands and thousands of people with a board-certified medical staff. And so vitamin C with lysine, and again, if you also have zinc in there too, because zinc is what actually goes in and does the killing. Vitamin C and quercetin and vitamin D allow the access to that vulnerable part of the virus. And now lysine also is in there. So for any kind of virus, consider lysine now. And work with a qualified person. Work with a physician or nurse or dentist or dietitian, someone who has a clinical background, understands nutritional biochemistry, and can help direct you in what you need. I don't recommend people do it on their own. For example, someone may not realize if they went in for surgery, you've got to stop 3 days before and not include any blood thinners for at least 3 days to a week afterwards, because that could interfere in clotting if you've had surgery. There are counterindications you have to always consider to be responsible when working with people. But I want to let you know the news today. Lysine should be in every healthcare facility in America. It should be in every nursing home. Also, if they really want to be smart and they really want to help people instead of just making money, then they would have a hyperbaric oxygen therapy in every single facility in America, every nursing home, assisted living center, hospital. And yeah, we're not talking about for burns. It works great. Or for stroke and post-stroke to stop the damage. Works great. We're talking about for helping with viral infections. So I'm going to share that with you. Mind you, lysine has a lot of other things it does. For example, lysine increases absorption of calcium. It relieves bouts of anxiety. It promotes wound healing. It's helpful for other conditions. It lowers cholesterol. Why? Because cholesterol is deposited in binding sites within coronary arteries. When lysine and vitamin C together occupy those binding sites, cholesterol is not deposited in the arteries. Worldwide, many billions of people harbor dormant herpes viruses that erupt into disease from time to time. And in fact, I think it was 2016, an estimated 3.7 billion people had herpes simplex. And about 66.6% of the world's population up to age 49 have herpes. So it's easy to get, it's inexpensive, and it can benefit people. You got Epstein-Barr virus, Bell's palsy. I don't know if she's still alive, but if she is, and if she's listening, I'd like her to call in, if not today, tomorrow, because she was the head of nursing at a major medical center. Her daughter was a medical doctor, her husband an engineer, and her husband came to see me because he was going in for a bypass surgery, and it was a very dangerous operation because of his age, and he was an engineer. He said, Gary, based upon the statistics I have read, I have a 15% chance of dying during the operation or another 15% chance of dying in the next 30 days. That's 30%. And that's all they say is available. That's why I'm here. And we weren't in my office. We were down on the stoop because he couldn't walk up the steps. So I went down one flight of steps and we sat there. And all the while, his wife and daughter just staring with daggers at me like, who is this nut job? So anyhow, that guy who couldn't walk up a flight of steps, his name was Ed Finkelstein. His wife is named Dolly Finkelstein. Jump ahead 2 years. Who wins Outstanding USA Track and Field Athlete of the Year in your age group? Dolly and Ed Finkelstein. Who won the New York Roadrunning Club Outstanding Athletes for the Year? This is not a prize for popularity. This is because you went into races, you set records. Dolly and Ed Finkelstein. Who for the next 10 years broke more senior records than anyone else in America? Dolly and Ed Finkelstein. Well, she came in about 2 weeks later with Bell's palsy. And, she, you know, face stretched down, etc. And she said, I said, would you like me to help? And she said, no, it's incurable. I said, well, okay. But what do you have to lose if you take a couple protocols? So we gave her a couple protocols, and lo and behold, she came back in and says, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And I remember saying to her, she got angry with me. I said, you mean you can't believe that there's some knowledge outside of your knowledge and your doctor's knowledge about how to heal the body? Somewhere in this vast universe, someone else has an idea? She just, those daggers came again. But anyhow, she was a wonderful human being. You can see them both in the documentary I did, Power Aging. I'd like her to tell that story. So if you're out there, it's been a while, give a call. Anyhow, it helps Bell's palsy. And So I just want to emphasize that we have tools, we've had tools all along, we're just not using them, and we should. All right? We should, from the very beginning, we should use these even preventatively. Okay? I believe that we have allowed our federal agencies, Big Pharma, and their supporters, and the media, to cause crimes against humanity, and 5 million people worldwide died because of them. I believe they should all be held accountable. That's just my feeling. By the way, omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids improve reading for children, so says University of Gothenburg in Sweden in a major article. So give your kids these, and better learning will come from that. I'll do one more now, and that's elevated stress hormones, and that's most people, especially your big ones, you know, catecholamines, adrenaline, cortisol. According to Kyoto University in Japan and the University of California at Los Angeles, it's linked to a higher risk of high blood pressure and heart events. This was published in the Peer Review Journal of Hypertension. So if you want to have those norepinephrine, epinephrine, dopamine, cortisol, those all can kill you. Literally, you can stress yourself to death. So just remember, the omega-3 and omega-6 can help that. And by the way, from Weifang People's Hospital in China, spirulina, spiru, S-P-I-R-U, lina, L-I-N-A, alleviates high-fat diet-induced cognitive impairment. That's good to know. Many of you are using spirulina every day. That I know. And regular exercise lowers your risk of developing anxiety by 60%, who says? University of Lund, L-U-N-D, in Sweden, published in Frontiers in Psychiatry. So the more you exercise, the less stress you're going to feel. Walking, biking, playing tennis, exercise, swimming, it's all good for you. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. Now, here's what's going to happen. We're going to come back from the break, and we're going to hear from Mike Wallace in a 60-minute special. But you got to hear what is being said. That's why please turn off anything that's distracting you right now. Just focus upon what you can watch it. Go to prn.fm, scroll down, you can watch it. Because he's confronting the head of the CDC, who said the vaccines were safe and effective. He's confronting the scientists who found it wasn't safe and effective. He then confronts the head of the CDC, who says that you didn't get this. No, then the man must be lying. Yeah. No, the man wasn't lying. He confronts Mary Tyler Moore. But listen to what they're saying about the fake swine flu. I'm not suggesting that COVID is fake. That's not the purpose of this. It's to show you the playbook that the CDC, FDA, and the powers and be in the media play to convince you that you must trust them 100%, and then what happens with the side effects, they take no responsibility for side effects. None. That's what you're going to see. So you see, we've been down this rodeo many times, and we're replaying it right out of the chute again. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
The flu season is upon us. Which type will we worry about this year? And what kind of shots will we be told to take? Remember the swine flu scare of 1976? That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion. Because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, 2/3 of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States, as well as 20 million deaths around the world.
See how easy it is to...
Thus, the U.S. government's publicity machine was cranked into action to urge all America to protect itself against the swine flu menace.
Influenza is serious business. During major flu epidemics, millions of people are sick and thousands die. Well, this year you can get protection. The vaccines are safe, easy to take, and they can protect you against flu. So roll up your sleeve. Protect yourself.
There's only one thing I can think of that hits harder than us.
What can that be?
The swine flu. It can knock you flat.
So what's the defense for it, huh?
Like our philosophy. You gotta hit it before it hits you.
You mean a shot?
Yeah.
You got yours?
You better believe it. If swine flu wants to challenge me, I'm ready.
Oh, me too, brother. Me too.
Get the swine flu shot.
One of those who did roll up her sleeve was Judy Roberts. She was perfectly healthy, an active woman, when in November of 1976, she took her shot. 2 weeks later, she says, she began to feel a numbness starting up her legs.
I joked about it at that time. I said, I'll be numb to the knees by Friday if this keeps up. By the following week, I was totally paralyzed.
So completely paralyzed, in fact, that they had to operate on her to enable her to breathe. And for 6 months, Judy Roberts was a quadriplegic. The diagnosis? A neurological disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS for short. These neurological diseases are little understood. They affect people in different ways. As you can see in these home movies taken by a friend, Judy Roberts' paralysis confined her mostly to a wheelchair for over a year. But this disease can even kill. Indeed, there are 300 claims now pending from the families of GBS victims who died, allegedly as a result of the swine flu shot. In other GBS victims, the crippling effects diminish and all but disappear. But for Judy Roberts, progress back to good health has been painful and partial.
Now, I notice that your smile, Judy, is a little bit constricted.
Yes, it is.
Is it different from what it used to be?
Very different. I have a greatly decreased mobility in my lips. And I can't drink through a straw on the right-hand side. I can't blow out birthday candles. I don't whistle anymore, for which my husband is grateful.
It may be a little difficult for you to answer this question, but have you recovered as much as you are going to recover?
Yes. This is it.
So you will now have a legacy of braces on your legs for the rest of your life?
Yes, the weakness in my hands will stay and the leg braces will stay.
So Judy Roberts and her husband have filed a claim against the U.S. government. They're asking $12 million, though they don't expect to get nearly that much.
Judy, why did you take the flu shot?
I'd never taken any other flu shots, but I felt like this was going to be a major epidemic. And the only way to prevent a major epidemic of a really deadly variety of flu was for everybody to be immunized.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold. An Army doctor here sent samples of their throat cultures to the New Jersey Public Health Lab to find out just what kind of bug was going around here. One of those samples was from a Private David Lewis who had left his sickbed to go on a forced march. Private Lewis had collapsed on that march, and his sergeant had revived him by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. But the sergeant showed no signs of illness. A few days later, Private Lewis died.
If this disease is so potentially fatal that it's going to kill a young, healthy man, a middle-aged schoolteacher doesn't have a prayer.
The New Jersey lab identified most of those soldiers' throat cultures as the normal kind of flu virus going around that year, but they could not make out what kind of virus was in the culture from the dead soldier and from four others who were sick. So they sent those cultures to the Federal Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, for further study. A few days later, they got the verdict, swine flu.
But that much publicized outbreak of swine flu at Fort Dix involved only Private Lewis, who died, and those four other soldiers who recovered completely without the swine flu shot.
If I had known at that time that the boy had been in a sick bed, got up, went out on a forced march, and then collapsed and died, I would never have taken the shot.
The rationale for our recommendation was not on the basis of the death of a single individual, but it was on the basis that when we do see a change in the characteristics of the influenza virus, it is a massive public health problem in this country.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine. And that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
The information form, the consent form, was also supposed to warn people about any risks of serious complications following the shot. But did it?
No, I had never heard of any reactions other than a sore arm, fever, this sort of thing.
Judy Roberts' husband, Gene, also took the shot.
Yes, I looked at that document. I signed it. Nothing on there said I was going to have a heart attack or I'd get Guillain-Barré, which I never heard of.
What if people from the government, from the Center for Disease Control, what if they had indeed known about it? What would be your feeling?
They should have told us.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hapwick?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hapwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hapwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that. I've said that Dr. Hapwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
And he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility?
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
So think of how many things that went wrong with the swine flu fiasco could be just put as a template right over everything that's gone wrong, including not having an accurate test to determine if you have the virus, is it active, or are you simply having a false positive or false negative test result. The test itself has not been accurate. The founder, the inventor of the test, Dr. Karamanlis, said don't use it for diagnosing whether you're actively infected. It cannot tell you that. He is correct. It has a lot of value, the test, but not for that. And yet, all these false negatives that people are now finding were included in the whole first rush to get the numbers as high as they could. Why did people want to overstate the numbers of infected as if you were infected, you were actively infected? But what about the millions, over 100 million Americans, not 30 million that was claimed last night in some interview, but over 100 million Americans who have been infected and are healthy? Some had no symptoms, were asymptomatic. Some had light symptoms. Older people with comorbidities may have had serious symptoms. Those people now have a vigorous immune system, natural immunity, which, according to a study out of Israel, and is now being independently confirmed with another study out of Sweden, provides you with at least a 1,200% increase in the body's immune response to the future. And that is more of a immune that will last for a long period of time. The vaccines wane very quickly than the boosters. Well, show me the studies on boosters. Show me with your original study. You said it's 95% effective. But you didn't do the absolute effectiveness. That's under 1%. 1%. You used the 95%, which was a subjective choice. You had a choice. But the FDA says use both figures. But you didn't use both figures. You only shared one figure. That's by intent. So now all these people who got both vaccines and now are infected, study after study after study pouring in every day, and I'm on top of all this every morning. I'm reading studies from all over the world are showing that the people who got both vaccines, in one case, 79% of the people in a country that got the vaccines are the ones who now have the new COVID variant and are sicker. And they're playing with the figures nonstop. But the people that are playing with the figures are not the people in the front lines treating the patients. We've had successful treatments, FDA-approved treatments, that have been used by billions of people safely in eradicating parasitic infections and other conditions, and now have been repurposed. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who claim, well, you're using a horse medicine, A, it's not the same thing. B, that was a lie, and it was stated the hospital that was overwhelmed by COVID cases where people use ivermectin and got sick. None of that happened. It was all a lie, and they had to retract that or repurpose their article by changing the titles. Just lie after lie after lie. Well, why isn't the mainstream media ever breaking any story about what's wrong with the official narrative? I have a clip from Anthony Fauci where he's being interviewed. This is several years ago. And someone says, well, if you have a viral infection, shouldn't we be further apart and I have a mask to protect? And Fauci laughs, says, that's nonsense. Nonsense then? And now it's two masks are necessary? And what about this? What about all those celebrities like Nancy Pelosi and all those donors sitting side by side, hundreds, in San Francisco at a fundraiser, $30,000 a pop to sit at that table? Not a person wearing a mask. Oh, the servants were wearing masks. And what about the Met? I am one of those people, as a populist, I'm one of those people who look at these megalomaniac, ultimate narcissists, and a lot of sociopaths, at these Metropolitan Museum of Art once a year gatherings, where you have to have two qualities to get in. You have to be rich and famous. You can be rich and not get in if you're not famous. You can be famous, not rich. Good luck there. But suddenly the Kardashians are there. And what have they actually contributed except using a lot of carbon, producing carbon dioxide and some methane and to keep their oxygen going to their brains? Well, I'm being optimistic that it can actually reach the brain. But they're there, and all these other people are there, no masks. What about Cortez being there and writing on the back to gain attention? Is there anyone who seeks more attention than she does? And she calls herself a progressive. Real progressives not be out there seeking that kind of attention. So you go to a place that's very exclusive for very rich, you know, very thinned intellect individuals, and no one's wearing a mask. You're not wearing a mask, but you have a dress on that says tax the rich. That's ironic, because everyone there is rich. And so did you go around and say, you shouldn't be here because you're rich? Why don't you give some money to something that actually means something other than another jeweled nose pin or another house in Beverly Hills? No, that's not the conversation. So in the irony of ironies that you can call yourself a populist, but nothing in your rhetoric comes out of really being populist, but now you're hanging with the rich and famous, just like Obama. Everyone at his party, no one wore a mask, but that's okay for them. You do it, and look at the woman that was body slammed by a bunch of goons, police, down in, I think it was Atlanta, because she was watching her son in an empty stadium. There was no one else around her. Her son was, I think, playing soccer or some sport, and she was body slammed. Guy on the beach, no one at the beach. He's sitting there looking at the waves, arrested. But no one at Obama and his hundreds of maskless, mindless. God, these people are contemptible. And yet we don't ever see the media challenging them. Why not? Why? Why? Why would all these people who've contributed nothing to making the world safer or better, just making money for themselves and their egos, show up like a bunch of narcissistic dancing clowns, no masks, and no one challenges that, yet walk right outside and get close to someone without a mask, and you could be arrested? Well, that's like going to Davos in a private jet to eat Kobe beef flown in from Japan, but you're for the environment, Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, sure you are. Yep. Boy, they typecast The Wolf of Wall Street with Leonardo DiCaprio a lot closer than what people realize. Nothing but hypocrisy everywhere we look. So now we have Big Pharma. I'd like for anyone in the audience, we have journalists in the audience, we have activist journalists, find me the article written in the last 2 years by mainstream media that challenges the ethics of the companies that are profiting from COVID. Show me the one article. In the interim, I want to share something. And there's a person out there, his name's William Falloon, and he's just one of the most courageous people, and he's a great journalist. And he created Life Extension Foundation, including the Anti-Aging Life Extension Foundation, where some of the best anti-aging research in the world is done. And he asked me would I add something yesterday to something he was working on. So here's what I'm going to share with you now. Everything I'm sharing with you is absolute fact. You can find this for yourself, but none of it, not a single thing I'm going to share with you now, is being considered in this. There has been a nonstop attack against those who promote natural remedies, herbs, supplements, even exercise, stress management, and a healthy plant-based diet. That was all considered quackery. And now we find that virtually 100% of the science published on PubMed supports it. Yet everything that the critics, the quackbusters, the skeptics, Wikipedia promotes, this actual scientific literature condemns. You eat the meat, you have a higher risk of dying of different cancers or contracting different cancers, breast cancer, prostate cancer. But look at all the peer-reviewed literature, hundreds of thousands of studies supporting a healthy lifestyle, including exercise, stress management, plant-based diet. But when did you see the companies that were selling OxyContin, OxyContin, it's different than oxytocin, totally different, OxyContin. It's mainly used to relieve pain, but it also is very addictive. When I walked down the streets of my hometown of Parkersburg, West Virginia, when I went back last year to the reunion, everything had changed. My whole town had become a ghetto. And I found people using drugs out in the open, everywhere. And a lot of them were using OxyContin or heroin because it was cheaper there. And yet, according to the FDA, OxyContin was, quote, less subject to abuse or addiction, end quote. Again, listen, less subject to abuse or addiction compared to other synthetic heroin drugs. It wasn't true. In fact, who sold us this? Well, Johnson & Johnson. You mean the same Johnson & Johnson that we're trusting that everything they're giving us now in their vaccines is safe and effective? Yes. So we decided to take a look at the death counts of opiate overdoses. You're looking at 1 million Americans, but maybe that doesn't mean anything. But then you're looking at far more tens of millions of Americans who have what is known as opiate use disorders. So the whole FDA claiming that it was safe is a lie. Absolute lie. It shows the total corruption of everyone and everything involved in policymaking and all these scientific panels who all have conflicts of interest at the FDA. Mind you, OxyContin and other synthetic heroin drugs, that is not an aberration. That is what Big Pharma has made massive profits from. But what is the downside? Well, the downside is after people have died, after people have been addicted, after it's changed their life, finally, the American Journal of the American Medical Association wrote an article. And it talked about the illicit acts perpetrated by the biggest pharmaceutical companies and the huge fines they paid. Did you know, for example, and would it change your opinion of the trustworthiness, the ethics of a company such as GlaxoSmithKline, paid nearly $10 billion, with a B, billion, in inflation-adjusted penalties between just 2003 and 2013. That's the highest total for any single drug company. Pfizer, same Pfizer, is second with $3 billion in fines to resolve what was the largest single healthcare fraud case in settlement in history. Johnson & Johnson came in third at $2.7 billion. Quote, resolve criminal and civil liability arising from allegations relating to the prescription drugs, including promotion and uses not approved as safe and effective by the FDA, and payment of kickbacks to physicians, I repeat, kickbacks to physicians and to the nation's largest long-term care pharmacy provider, end quote. That's the government saying that. According to the co-author of the Journal of the American Medical Association report, quote, the pharmaceutical industry is unique in that all large pharmaceutical firms explicitly state that they are focused on promoting patient welfare, yet the majority of large pharmaceutical firms engage in illegal activities that harm patient welfare, end quote. So we dug further. We did what the New York Times refuses to do. 26 pharmaceutical companies, you all know their names, paid a combined fees of $33 billion from 2003 to just 2016 for all illicit activities. And by the way, 85% of pharmaceutical companies sampled paid out monetary penalties for civil and criminal misconduct that you and I would go to jail for. Despite the massive size of these fines, the drug companies profited from their unlawful and immoral behaviors, quote, knowingly selling drugs that had lethal side effects that were intentionally covered up. So, now we take a look at what does this mean? So I decided to do something that would give us a proximity of understanding. So just, I'm going to read figures to you, and they are accurate. And this is the downside of what you're about to hear. This is what happens when profits are more important than any other factor when it comes to selling the public on something. And by the way, as an aside, why is it that no one, including the Times of London, the New York Times, has talked about the 30,305 people who died, according to the government, within 21 days of having the COVID-19 vaccine in just England during the first 6 months of 2021? That's according to the ONS data. And that was found out by a Freedom of Information request from the Public Health England. Not my information, theirs. Let me repeat that. In one country, 30,305 people, according to the government, died within 21 days of the COVID vaccine. Now, that's just one country. Imagine you start using all the other countries and you start saying, wow, this is serious. Well, how about this? How about OxyContin and the drug similar to it, but mainly it? The owners of the patent on that, the family, are allowed to keep the majority of their billions. They were given a fine, which they can easily pay. Nothing happens to them. But how many people did these drugs, the doctors, the pharmacy, and the companies, the manufacturers like Johnson & Johnson, how many people died? Americans. The Revolutionary War, 6,800 deaths. War of 1812, 15,000 Americans. Mexican War, 1,730 dead. The Civil War, 620,000 dead. And some will say it's a higher number, but it's in the end of the vicinity. The highest number is 750. No one knows absolutely. The Spanish-American War, 385. World War I, 53,400 deaths. World War II, 291,600 deaths. The Korean War, 36,600 deaths. And the Vietnam War, 47,400 combat deaths. The other deaths, by the way, are caused by other things. That's where you get a higher number. Add all those deaths together of all of our wars, from the Revolutionary War, all of them right up till today, OxyContin and the synthetic heroines have killed more Americans. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody has to give back their illicit gains. They're allowed to keep most of it. Put that in perspective. And these are the very corporations that you are believing, you are trusting, who control all the medicines you take and the vaccines that you're using. And these are the people who go from working as head of the FDA, head of the CDC, into those very companies, and we're supposed to believe them and trust them? Yeah. No. Now, we're going to say goodbye to our WBI audience in 3 minutes, but we're going to go to a clip now that you've never heard. This is what's going on in Great Britain. This is the beginning of it. You can listen to the whole thing and download it and watch it. This is a funeral home director who decided to tell the truth. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, I was going to run the conversation like an interview, and then I decided, no, I'll just let him speak. And then after that, I was going to edit it down and create some sort of a presentable clip for you. But after listening to it back, I thought, no, I'm just going to play you the entire conversation in its raw form, warts and all, and let you hear what this man had to say. And I think it's extremely important, folks. This man has some compelling information that everybody needs to hear. So you're a funeral director, hey, John? Yeah,
I am indeed, bud. My name's John. I'm a funeral director of 15 years. I'm based in the UK in a place called Milton Keynes, which is kind of 40 lovely miles.
Place, right? Lovely place. I've been there. Yeah. I've actually spoken at Horwood House in Milton Keynes.
Okay. Small world, my friend. Yeah. So I've been a funeral director for about 15 years now. 10 of those were for one of the big funeral providers in the industry, Co-op Funeral Care. And then 5 years ago, I jumped ship and set up on my own because I wasn't really happy with how things were being done at the co-op following the collapse of the bank. You know, people kind of became cash cows instead of being treated the way they should be, in my opinion.
So what are you seeing now, being a funeral director? How are you seeing things over the last couple of years, mate? Did you see a pandemic last year?
Let me start from the beginning. So in 2019, I had a family come and see me who had lost a loved one. And they had lost a loved one in the neighboring borough of Northampton. So they asked me to go to Northampton and collect their loved one. And they complained at the time that the hospital wouldn't let them see that loved one. So I went to the Northampton hospital and kind of collected their loved one. And while I was there, I asked the guys there in the mortuary, you know, why wouldn't you let this family see the loved one? And they opened the chapel doors or the viewing room doors, and there was a great big inflatable kind of blow up pandemic mortuary. I've since found out it is. And they told me there was something really horrible coming, and this is why, because the viewing room was being used by this bit of kit. And that was my kind of introduction to COVID. And that was back in end of November, beginning of December 2019. So Christmas came.
So they already had this temporary morgue and knew something terrible was coming in November 2019.
Yeah, I saw it firsthand and was told that based on the story that I've just told you, kind of thing.
Okay.
So the news broke just after Christmas, and we were all told about a Chinese lab and the Wuhan wet market that had been there for hundreds of years without an issue that suddenly was an issue. the hysteria was mounting, and it wasn't long into 2020 before I was contacted by the local BBC. And they asked, they knew that I was a funeral director, and they asked to come out and do a report around COVID. And I'd hasten to add, at this time, early on in the process, I believed COVID exactly the same as everyone else. You know, I was convinced it was real. We were being told it was real. And you have to remember that if I go to a hospital and, for example, they tell me a deceased is HIV or, for example, is tuberculosis, then obviously that's something I would take very serious. And COVID was no exception. So I was kind of trying to be as careful as I possibly could. The BBC came. They brought a cameraman and a lady that spoke to me. They briefed me very intently on what they were going to ask me and told me the answers they wanted. And they asked me to dress up in full PPE. And I was a bit reluctant at the time because, you know, all funeral directors, we use aprons and obviously gloves, but masks and stuff like that is not something we would usually use. I worked for the coroner for 7 years, and the only time I would ever use a mask there is if I was attending the scene of a death where that deceased had perhaps been there for a while, you know, an undiscovered death. And then you put Vicks on the mask, and the idea is just to keep the smell away. It's not going to protect you against anything, least of all a virus. So they got the interview they wanted, you know, and promoted the hysteria. And I kind of kick myself now because it's simply not true. Any of it is not true. So very soon into 2020, funeral directors began panicking. You know, the death rate wasn't there, though. There was no increased death rate. That we were seeing deceased that were deliberately labeled with COVID, but there wasn't any increase in numbers at all. And that was across the board, as far as I was aware. Certainly every funeral director I spoke to and every mortuary I went into weren't seeing pandemic numbers. We were seeing people that were labeled with COVID, but you know, how deadly was that? I really can't tell you. So I had a family come and see me who'd lost a young child, and the child was six, and a cancer sufferer. So totally not related. Basically, they wanted to see their little girl. And this was at a time when other funeral directors were taking body bags and coffins to the hospital and sealing people straight in those body bags and coffins there and then. There was no dressing, no viewings, nothing like that, because they could do it because of COVID, you know. I felt that that wasn't fair to those people that had lost someone via a Zoom call or standing there in a hazmat suit, you know. That just isn't fair. So I washed and dressed this little girl and gave the family time to see their child, as any decent human would. And I kind of came to the conclusion then, you know, my job is to look after people. And if that means that I fall over in the process of doing that, so be it. And I've washed and dressed everyone the whole way through COVID, regardless of whether they've been COVID diagnosis or not.
Okay. And funny that you haven't died of COVID, brother.
Well, not only that, but my wife's helped me, and I've also got an embalmer who works for me full time, who's 55. He's a heart attack survivor, 10 years now. And he's, you know, none of us have had a day off. We're all perfectly healthy. And they've streamlined the process now where a doctor's not in attendance at a death. The police are not in attendance for a death.
Okay. It gets really interesting from here on out. You've already heard something that should raise a red flag. The British government was preparing mortuaries or funeral homes and places in the hospitals as a emergency mortuary before we even knew that COVID existed, before any information had come out on it. Interesting. Okay? It's a question. Now, also, you're going to hear him talk about all these patients suddenly died during a three-month period that he had never seen in his career, and he checked the records, and no one had all these people in nursing homes dying every single day, and yet they were all had something in common. They were all taking this special, very powerful tranquilizer that can induce death, and it's used in hospice care. And once that, then he saw that the government had purchased 100,000 extra of these pills. And then when this became public, suddenly all those deaths stopped. And he was in a nursing home to get a body, and he was reading the chart, one after the other. You're going to hear that. You're also going to hear him talk. Did you hear him say the BBC told him the answers they wanted? All right? Staging. We know how the BBC does. But more importantly, he's going to talk about what the government's own agent was doing, calling him, and he had a patient who had died at the age of 95 from natural causes, make it COVID. A person who had died in a hospice care of terminal cancer, make it COVID. A person who had died in a motorcycle accident, make it COVID. Everything was to be COVID, according to that person who was directing all this. He was collecting the numbers. You began to see how everything was brought up. What would happen today if we never had a PCR test, that we based everything upon symptoms, and therefore a person had symptoms, they went to see their physician, and based upon what the physician saw, the blood chemistries they did, the symptoms would be ameliorated or treated using existing protocols. All that stopped when we were told, you don't treat a person. You let them stay in their house. Now we know if you catch the virus within the first 10 days and treat early with a combination of medicines and nutrients, you can stop almost all of it. That's intentional. All this is intentional. You just have to put the pieces together. And that's what we're doing. More of this interview tomorrow. And again, you haven't heard this anywhere else. We're sharing this with you because these are the pieces. It's like a cold case file where suddenly you think, well, there's nothing more to know. Oh, yeah, here's something else. There's a lot more to know, and we're going to be sharing it with you. By the way, go to GaryAndAll.com and sign up. Coming up in about 3 weeks on a Saturday at noon, the premiere, for those who didn't see it, of Last Call for Tomorrow, the most important environmental documentary, according to those who've professionals who've seen it, and I'll give you those. You can actually read for yourself. Read their actual quotes. Some of the most famous people in the world in this area watched it. I sent out some copies to them, got their feedback. If you want to see the real problems, unvarnished, unedited, the real truth about how bad it is, and then the solutions, what we can do about it, go to GaryAndAll.com and sign up for Last Call for Tomorrow. I'll be there. I'll take questions, and I've got two phenomenal guests who are going to be on afterwards for about an hour each. So it's going to be about a 3.5-hour, 4-hour afternoon. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.